This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Now, we do have Matt Wade in the studio. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Great to have you here. Effervescent, as always.
Hello, Matt. I'm Bronwyn.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
So you've had a pretty big week too, I think.
I have. I mean, aside actually from the fact that there was a lot in the news space when it comes to queer news, our main journalist was actually off sick this week, so it just made it a bit more of a busy week.
You've been editor and journalist then.
Yeah.
So and probably everything else as well.
Yeah, my hand was in a lot of different pies, but I think we got through it okay. And there was plenty on this week, definitely, as you mentioned.
Now, the story that we've already talked about, but I'd be interested in your take on this as well, is the Uniting Church of Australia opening the doors to marriage equality. Now, we did have the Reverend Sharon Hollis, who's the equivalent of the Archbishop of Victoria and President in Waiting of the
National Uniting Church.
Yeah. In the studio earlier this morning. Well, what's your take on this position?
I guess it's great in the sense that obviously they're allowing ministers to now conduct same-sex weddings if they wish to. The flip side is, of course, that those who don't want to can still deny conducting a same-sex ceremony. Interestingly, when we put that story out there, our readers, they had mixed opinions, but a lot of them were kind of saying, well, it's still great at the end of the day because we wouldn't want somebody that is anti-gay or anti-LGBT to conduct our ceremonies anyway. So I guess this almost acts as almost a filter. So the people that would be doing it, they're allowed to do it, which is great. But you know that they want to do it as well. It's not going against their belief system. So it's interesting. I mean, I think it's a great step because, I mean, it means that, you know, the Uniting Church, which is massive, can now, conduct same-sex marriage ceremonies, which is amazing. But obviously, it would be great if there were no caveats as well.
Yeah, and it kind of goes to the bigger issue of discrimination, doesn't it? And whether religious organisations or other organisations, for example, can be allowed to discriminate. But I think the Uniting Church would argue that it's better to maintain relationships and bring people on a journey and allow differences of opinion to potentially change and grow. And sort of my experience is that's what's happened as well. I mean, if you think about the plebiscite and the conversation nationally, if we'd had it 20 years ago, the outcome might have been very different. Mm. So
it's true, and I think you nailed it. At the end of the day, allowing everyone to kind of exist with their beliefs at the moment, like those who want to do it can and those who don't, that's fine. But, I mean, with time, some of those opinions may change anyway.
I'm sure they will.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think you are right. I think it's a very positive step. Mm-hmm. And, it is a bit like two steps forward, one step back. But this is really moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I think what's most interesting is the comment that Reverend Sharon Hollis did make during the interview this morning. What she said was there has been silence from all the other churches at a national level. They haven't said anything.
In response to the Uniting Church's decision.
Correct. I think that is
Well, it's probably quite confronting for them.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. Of course it is. So the other story that's been big sort of hit the press overnight is Barry Humphries. Now, Barry Humphries, as we all know, has a couple of characters, but the most well-loved character in Australia is a drag character. It's Dame Edna Everidge. We all grew up with Dame Edna Everidge. Mm. Now, Barry Humphries has come out making some transphobic comments.
Yeah.
But also saying that he loves Trump.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. And actually, I'm glad that you prefaced it by mentioning, obviously, his main character, Dame Edna, because as someone who's really built a career on playing with gender and embracing that fluidity in a sense, to come out and so being so forthright in his distaste for trans people is just really shocking. Interestingly, it's not the first time he's made comments like this. I know in 2016 he referred to trans women as mutilated men. So this isn't...
What?
Yeah, so it's not that his views aren't necessarily novel. However, the fact that he's still getting a platform to... Or that he still feels that he needs to say it out there in public space.
Yeah, I mean, what's his agenda? I mean, you half think, maybe this is just kind of joking or this is a media I'm relevant. Let me be relevant again.
Or maybe he's declaring something.
Well, it's interesting, and I don't know if you've already touched on this, but I mean, just to, let the listeners be privy to what he said. I mean, in the recent interview, the one that happened overnight, he was basically saying that being trans is a fashion, and he said that it was evil of, I guess, crazy teachers to teach students about trans identity. So he was basically saying any school or classroom that is trans inclusive or is teaching about trans identity, like he was, I guess, speaking out against that. And it just some of the language, I mean, saying, using words like evil, and he actually accused trans activists of terrible ratbaggery, which is just so, I mean, it's bizarre because obviously his career has been built on playing around with gender. But even outside of that, I mean, I think it kind of helps to highlight that as much as when we see someone in the public eye say something anti-trans, it's like, okay, that person is transphobic, great. But when it's someone that I guess we maybe identified as being part of our community in some capacity, it's more shocking, but it helps to remind people that there are people within our community too that hold quite prejudiced views to different sectors of that community. Do you know what I mean? Mm.
I find it astonishing, actually. Mm. And especially given that he has played with gender his entire career. In fact, his success is based on gender fluidity and gender identity. So what was the context for these comments that he made? I mean,
So he was speaking to The Spectator, which is a conservative UK magazine. And I guess he must have a show coming up because he's talking actually more about cabaret and his fondness for cabaret, which ironically enough, very much plays with gender often, you know. Mm. And then the interviewer must have prompted him or prodded him about gender, and he had no real hesitation, you know, in throwing the trans community under the bus. And then, as you mentioned actually earlier, he also said that he was grateful to Trump for, I guess, stirring up politics, and that, you know, he was asked whether he would be much. The reason he brought that up was because he was asked if he was anti-Trump or if he would march in protests against Trump, which have happened in the UK recently. And he said no, he's actually grateful to him, and he wouldn't take part in any of those protests.
And what's been the reaction to him?
Almost universally, and I say this even though obviously the Star Observer and I guess Joy, the listeners are probably on side already, but for the most part, shocked. And similarly, I guess, to what you were saying, Taz, and for the reasons why you were saying, it's just, you know, when we hear someone say something transphobic, it's shocking and it's awful and it's very damaging. But when you hear someone who literally has made a career, as you mentioned, on playing with gender, it just is all the more bizarre. And it doesn't mean that because you've played with gender or because you have a character, a drag sort of character, it doesn't, I guess, give you license to say things like that, because you're basically stroking a very broad brush across an entire community and using quite loaded language like evil and ratbaggery and it's awful. It doesn't mean you should have a platform to use that language. You don't get a free pass, is guess what I'm saying.
Do you think it'll have an impact on the sales for his future shows?
Well, it's interesting because I mean, I'm people of all, you know,
I don't know, he also opposed the redevelopment of the Camberwell railway station.
He did too.
Silly old goose.
He did too.
It may impact the way that a lot of people perceive him. Ticket sales, I'm not sure, but I do know that this isn't the first time that he said something, and it potentially won't be the last. But I mean, each time he comes forward and says something as nasty as this, I mean, it's another nail in the, you know, the proverbial coffin, in a sense, because, you know,
he's not playing out a sort of a Les Patterson style character, is he?
No, it comes across as very sincere. I mean, look, I think someone mentioned earlier, one of you were saying that it could potentially be a way to kind of get in the spotlight a bit with something quite outrageous. But I mean, this is on another level. I mean, this is quite nasty and damaging towards trans people. He could go a different route if he wanted to get that sort of attention. So,
And you are listening to Saturday Magazine, Bronwyn Tass and the effervescent editor of Saturday Magazine, Matt Wade.
And 317 says, I think it's sad, time to retire, Mr. Humphreys.
That was definitely a common sentiment yesterday. A lot of people were saying, I think you need to know when it's time to throw in the towel. And I know we've spoken about this already, but it's one of those things where, look, if you have those views around trans people or Donald Trump, have them, that's fine. But I guess it's just making sure that you're aware of the implications of spreading them, like what that might have. Like, I guess you've got a platform, you've got a fan base by projecting these thoughts and
you've
ideas
got to
out
use
there.
It responsibly.
Well, I think one of you just said, you know, it's time to throw the towel in. I actually think it's time to throw the towel at him. Sorry to be so direct.
We won't be rushing off to a show, will we, Tess?
No, I don't think so. I think he's done his dash, Now, speaking about transphobia, there was some more transphobic stuff occurring in the Daily Telegraph during the week. Now, what happened there, Matt?
So, in the Sunday Telegraph, last weekend, they ran a story about Scarlett Johansson, who was set or slated to appear in an upcoming film about a trans man, and she would be playing that trans man. And there was a lot of kind of furor around that because obviously she's a cisgendered woman. And so people were saying, you know, why aren't these kind of roles going to trans people? And so the Daily Telegraph ran a story on it, and they used a transphobic slur in the headline. Splashed across the page, like very large font. I mean, even though that's not necessarily...
Can you say it or is it really bad?
Well, yeah, I guess it's just the headline was essentially, where is it? It was Scarlett Dumps Tranny Film Role.
Oh.
And it was one of those things which just... you guys are aware, being a part of a media organisation, it's just... That I don't think that was a mistake. Like, it's one of those things,
of
like, you don't just
not.
Accidentally let that slip in there. Like, someone's putting it in there, you know, purposely because either they... think it's trivial or they don't really care.
Well, they think it'll draw interest to the story.
And that as well. Interestingly, though, since that happened, trans athlete Ricky Coolen, who was interviewed by the Daily Telegraph back in 1991 about her transition, spoke with the editor of the Sunday Telegraph over the course of the week, and she was saying how it was very harmful, and she kind of used her story from 1991 to kind of show how to report about trans issues, because interestingly, which, I mean, goodness, that was nearly 30 years ago, it was actually reported on very sensitively, and she was saying, you know, it's this is how you should be reporting on these issues and not using, you know, slanderous words like that. And actually, she was saying that, let me just get this right, she said, in this instance, at the past Sunday, you know, the paper acted with a desire to create anger and a culture of disrespect towards trans women. And that's what I was touching on earlier, which was that, you know, it's not a mistake that that word was put in there. And I think...
It's quite deliberate.
Yeah.
Quite deliberate. Mm. Quite deliberately inciting.
Hmm. Exactly. And I think there was a lot of outrage on social media, as there always is, but I hope that... I guess the person who printed it or wrote it was held to account, because it just, yeah, that kind of stuff in this day and age, I mean, shouldn't fly.
So what about the story that's in the paper today about all the stars that knocked back the role in Brokeback Mountain? And one of them I read this morning. Yeah, and, you know, like Brad Pitt and all these people were all asked to take that role, and then, of course, they all regretted it because Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger just got so many Academy Awards.
Made their careers.
Can I assume, I don't want to jump the gun, but did it mention, was the part of the reason why the other actors declined the role was because it was a gay role?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That was the implication. That they weren't prepared to take on the gay role.
That's why I respect, I guess, particularly, I mean, Brokeback Mountain isn't that old of a film, but some of the even older movies where, whether it was Cruising or whatever it may be, where a straight actor played a gay character, I mean...
Well, there's Some of Us with...
Yeah, exactly. It's just
Russell Crowe hasn't affected his career. Mm. In fact, it actually parachuted his career. Mm.
That's one of the movies that everyone remembers, and I think that... I respect that in a lot of ways because they didn't care like what impact it might have, even though it ended up being positive. That's interesting. I didn't see that one.
Now, my favourite story in the course of the week was that Jesus actually wrote to the people of Tasmania.
Yeah.
Tell us about
that. Can you believe it? Yeah, so
basically. Now, which Jesus, by the way, is it like Jesus Christ Jesus, or is it like a Spanish person?
Like me, yeah.
Okay,
Spanish
so
Jesus. Jesus. Yeah.
If the letter's to be believed, it is by Jesus Christ himself. So, the Tasmanians were in
for it. Pardon my laughter. Yeah.
Look, I know ever since the marriage equality debate and even during it, we saw some interesting things, but it's still going.
I could see a fundamentalist Christian doing that and doing it with a straight face too. That's even worse.
So essentially, Tasmanians, particularly in Hobart, but they discovered this strange homophobic letter in their letterboxes and posted around the city over the past week, which was signed off by Jesus, as you mentioned. And it was essentially telling people to stop teaching their children the ways of destruction. And it also called on people to speak to their politicians to amend the Marriage Act and ban gay marriage. So I guess it was just a novel way of trying to incite people to be against marriage equality.
It's pretty creative, really, isn't it?
Yeah, look, credit to, you know, trying something different. But I just, I mean... It is laughable as well. Interestingly, actually, and I put this down because I wanted to make note of it. One of the lines in the letter said, saying, do this, amend the Marriage Act. And then it said, or do you want me to bring more storms of destruction? And we actually looked on the Bureau of Meteorology and Tasmania's seasonal average has actually been relatively normal. So I think Jesus should visit more often.
Oh, I'd say so. And given that Jesus actually never did any of that sort of stuff, that's all in the Old Testament, I think.
It was actually God, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really God, yeah, you know.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that's the last of those kind of tactics, but I don't anticipate that it had any effect whatsoever, aside from people having laugh. In fact, actually, a lot of people were writing things over the top of the letter and posting those online, like saying, you know, F off or whatever it might have been, and those gained a lot more traction than the original letter, so, yeah.
I just find it amusing, really.
Yeah, I think there was maybe this kind of naive perception that after we got marriage equality, even though it's been great, that those kind of dissenting voices would somehow disappear or maybe just, you know, get over it. And maybe some people have, but that's not the case. I mean, a lot of it has moved towards the classroom around trans education, as you're mentioning, but... Yeah, I think we're going to still see a lot more of that. This anti-marriage
stuff. I sat with this amazing lesbian woman in the Uniting Church debate, and she made the statement. She said, "You know, there's so much more interesting about me than being gay." Mm. She said, "Actually, I'm an environmental scientist."
Oh wow!
You know, and that's the thing that this Jesus letter shows me is for some people this is like an absolute obsession.
That's all it's about.
It's all it's about. It's all they think about in their waking moments. I mean. It's about identity, but it's not the only thing about people's identity. You know,
The bit that I don't understand is why people are obsessed with these things.
I know, that's my point.
And why they have to go out and... I mean, it doesn't affect them.
It's interesting,
it makes no difference to your life that I'm gay, really.
No,
it makes absolutely no difference to your life. Why is that an issue for you? Why do you need to go to these lengths to campaign and carry on? That's the bit that I don't understand.
It's scary a little bit as well because, I mean, I guess to get to that point where you feel the need to speak out about it so vehemently, and you're right, when it has actually no impact on your life whatsoever, there must just be some real deep-seated rage or, you know, something.
Something visceral and down there that's just really twisted and awful.
Mm. Mm. And look, I have to tell this story. My partner was telling a story recently to me about a cooler conversation that they're having at work. Is that
how you say? Yeah.
Around the cooler,
the water cooler, and somebody was slagging on about trans people, and then he said, "Look, hang on," he said, "What's the problem? How does this affect you?" And when he actually confronted him and he was able to reflect on that, he actually changed his point of view.
Ah, interesting,
So sometimes that's all it needs. Sometimes people actually just get on the bandwagon for the sake of getting on the bandwagon, I suspect.
I actually think a lot of that kind of, well, the Jesus letter, but things that are a lot more overt and in your face makes people shy away or turn away from the issue. And just, you're right, those kind of just person-to-person conversations with people you know, friends, colleagues, those are often the most powerful.
So the other thing that happened during the week was something in New South Wales schools. So what's happening in, because it's New South Wales schools are a funny place, really.
Yeah, you know, they've had pretty progressive ministers for education.
But their policies sort of wax and wane a little bit, don't they?
And it's interesting as well because before I mentioned about this story, I think a week or two ago, some research came out that suggested that New South Wales teachers that identified as LGBTI were overwhelmingly discriminated, and a lot of them reported experiences of anti-gay bias in the classroom, whether it's from their boss or whether it's from their colleagues or even students, you know. So it's obviously still an issue. And I thought I'd just also touch on the fact that it's interesting, given we're talking about marriage equality as well, I feel like Australia in particular generally follows on trends, like whereas America got marriage equality done years ago and then we've just recently got it done. The next, I guess, battlefront for America has very much been about trans identities and in the classroom, in the bathroom, and now that we've got marriage equality, I feel like it's very much shifting into that as well with the Safe Schools panic. So yeah, this most recent story is essentially the New South Wales Teachers Federation have encouraged teachers in New South Wales to show LGBTI films to their students, I guess in a way to kind of promote diversity and inclusion.
And so that's a union push, not an education department.
No.
Push.
So they've basically provided a list of resources like films and how they also might fit into the syllabus, like what classes they've done the research, like they know how it could fit in. And they've provided that to the education department or to teachers to kind of somehow incorporate that. And some parents obviously are not on board with that, and the Australian actually wrote an article about it.
Australian would.
That very much incited a bit of panic in the sense that they were suggesting that by showing these films it was exposing kids to adult
Barry
themes.
It's the Barry Humphries line too, you know, the teachers shouldn't be teaching them about it, they're encouraging it.
It's too adult for them to see. I mean, they wouldn't say that if it was a heterosexual, you know, M-rated movie, but if it's something that's, you know, Love, Simon. So some of the films that they recommended were like Love, Simon or Gaby Baby, which was the Australian documentary about, you know, rainbow families.
It's a gorgeous film.
But yeah, so some of the more conservative parents and the Australian, you know, the article.
Well, they think that the kids might catch it.
Well, sometimes I wonder if that's
the movie and they'll catch it. Oh.
It's like catching a cold.
Yeah, that's right.
But they might catch gay.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, research has very much indicated that, you know, when students see themselves reflected in the curriculum, so if they're learning about things where case studies involve same-sex attracted people, then they're a lot more engaged because for a lot of the time they don't see themselves at all in the classroom. No. So I think it's actually a great initiative if it were to be adopted. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yes, unfortunately, it needs to be driven by
the department
rather than the. But you know, nevertheless, I think these things are dynamic.
Yeah, but you know, it's important
to have the conversation.
And teachers do have, you know, a lot of choice. They try and be careful, but you know, I can remember when it was controversial to show Romeo and Juliet in the film. Right. You know, and you know, young people having sex. So you know, let's hope that teachers are courageous and they.
It just needs
stuff.
To switch on television, free-to-air television,
yeah.
And see people having sex.
That's right.
Hey, Matt, great to have you in the studio. We just run out of time again.
That's
I can't believe how quickly it happens. But so much to talk about. You'll be back with us again in a couple of weeks' time.
Whenever you need me. I always love being here, so thank you for
having
me.
Well, we have you as a regular anyway, so I think we've got a monthly spot, don't we?
No, great. I'd love to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Lots of news, lots of good stuff happening, and it's good to have your perspective on things and keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Thanks, Meg.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.